Translation: Any human being who prays like Brahma and who thus worships me shall very soon be blessed with the fulfillment of all his desires, for I am the Lord of all benediction. Responsively: Any human being who prays like Brahma,
any human being who prays like Brahma,
and who thus worships me,
and who thus worships me,
shall very soon be blessed,
shall very soon be blessed,
with the fulfillment of all his desires,
the fulfillment of all his desires,
for I am the Lord of all benediction.
For I am the Lord of all benediction.
And there's a short purport. The prayers offered by Brahma cannot be chanted by anyone who desires to fulfill his own sense gratification. Such prayers can be selected only by a person who wants to satisfy the Lord in his service. The Lord certainly fulfills all desires in regard to transcendental loving service, but he cannot fulfill the whims of non-devotees, even when such casual devotees offer him the best of prayers. So I was only asked to give this class about 2 minutes ago, so I haven't really studied it very much. That being said, this chapter in the Bhagavad Gita is quite an amazing chapter. I remember quite a few years ago now, I was in London and I was talking with His Holiness Mahavishnu Goswami, the older Mahavishnu Maharaj, who passed away, and he was encouraging me. He said, "You should learn every verse in this chapter. It's a very important chapter." And actually we see, Lord Brahma's prayers, and then, a very, very full of realization. They're very, very deep prayers. He's actually talking about the nature of the Supreme Lord. And these are prayers that we all need to be learning so that we can also offer similar prayers. Because we see that, obviously we look at our involvement as human beings and as devotees, but not actually that evolved in comparison to previous acharyas or in comparison to great personalities like Lord Brahma, who actually have deep realization, they actually understand the nature of the Supreme. So generally speaking, devotees are encouraged rather than create, of course there's no problem with offering our own prayers to the Lord, but better is we offer the prayers that are given by the acharyas. We see Narottam Das Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Govinda Das, all these great acharyas have written these most amazing prayers. And the benefit of chanting their prayers as opposed to making our own prayers is that the prayers of the acharyas are so full of realization about the nature of the Supreme, about the nature of the material world, about the nature of the self. So by chanting those prayers, we're also learning philosophy. Because I think it was Jananda Goswami was mentioned the other day, actually it might have been in Sydney, he was doing initiation yoga there, that the beginning of humility is knowledge. If we actually understand, and we see that Prabhupada points this out in the 10th chapter of the Gita, at the end of the 10th chapter, that by knowing the nature of the Supreme, then this is the beginning of humility. But by studying the Shastra, understanding the nature of the Supreme, understanding the nature of ourself, because the fact is that every living entity in this world is thinking that they're, basically they're thinking they're God. Yet that's not the nature of the jiva. The nature of the jiva is jivera svabhavai krishnena nityaras, krishnena tathati shakti bed beda prakash. That we're an eternal servant of Krishna, an infinitesimal spiritual being, completely apart from the gross and subtle body, and just tathati shakti, with the energy of the Lord. And this is confirmed. We see a few verses ago where he says chakra. What is it? Chakartanga, where he talks about anga. You're my limb, you're my part, your parcel. Every living entity is nothing but a part and parcel of Krishna. Therefore, just as we talk about the limbs of the body, for instance, anga means like a limb. You talk about the limbs of the body, then their purpose is to serve the body. And if the limb stops or the finger stops serving the body, then it becomes useless. It has no function at all. And generally, if they stop functioning, then if you leave them on the body, they rot and they become, they call it gangrene. They can get gangrene and rotten, and that can infect the whole body, get into the blood and poison the blood, etc. And then eventually it goes to your brain, you become mad. So when you get some infection like that, then the best thing to do is to remove the limb from the body. So, because the function of the limb is to serve the whole, or the function of the part is to serve the whole. So in the same way, we see the function of the jiva is to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Brahma has realized that, and he's stating that in his prayers because he's been tasked with the business of creating the universe, the material universe. And he was just given one instruction. Does anyone know the instruction he received? Huh? No, what was the guidance he was given for creating the universe? Om Bhuvasvaha Tatsavatusa. He was actually given the first Gayatri mantra. You know, it says Om Bhuvasvaha. So it describes the three planetary systems: lower planets, earthly planets, and the upper planets, the heavenly planets. Tatsavatur and the sun. You know, so in that one prayer, Krishna's given him the instruction on how to create the entire universe, but he was not feeling he was capable. He was, you know, he had some humility there. From his performance of yagya, his austerities, he's gained knowledge, and therefore he was understanding his position that, you know, I'm not capable of doing this. I actually need the mercy of the Lord. So he's praying for the mercy of the Lord. And now, we see, I think it was starting in the previous prayer. Oh, no, two going back, the Lord's saying that, he's satisfied. He's satisfied with the prayers that Lord Brahma has offered. He's satisfied not just with the prayers, but the realization he was expressing in those prayers. Because we can offer so many prayers and we can say, well, you know, by my mercy, my Lord, that, you know, you're able to have me as your servant and all this kind of, you know, stupid stuff. But not actually expressing any understanding of the facts, of the reality of this material world, the reality of my situation here and, you know, Krishna's position, etc. like that. But Brahma, in his prayers, he's expressed his realization of the reality, you know, who the Lord is, his the role he serves. Because this section is dealing with, I can't remember the terminology for it, but it's dealing with the creation. The Bhagavatam has 10 major topics. So this section of the Bhagavatam is dealing with creation. And you know, there's two creations. There's the primary creation and the secondary creation. So this is the secondary creation. Because obviously the primary creation comes from Krishna. He creates all the material elements, as he says in the Gita, that I am the source of all material world, material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. There's nothing in this world that doesn't come from Krishna. You know, we come from Krishna, all the matter comes from Krishna, all the living entities come from Krishna. Everything. The stars, the planets, whatever there is in existence comes from Krishna. And he says, the wise who perfectly know this, they engage in my service and worship me with all their hearts. So Brahma's in that category. He's a wise person. He's the most wise person. He's understood this. Therefore, rather than thinking, oh, I'm so wonderful, look at me, I'm so powerful. I mean, and if you look in terms of our position, you know, Brahma is extraordinarily powerful. I mean, it's like, you know, you could use the analogy of like holding a candle to the sun. If you hold a candle up to the sun, you know, what's the comparison? The candle's nothing. You can't even see the light of a candle if you hold it up in front of the sun. So in the same way, Brahma, in comparison to Brahma, we're nothing. We have no capacity whatsoever. Yet, the interesting thing, Prabhupada would often use the term in this material world, the pauper is proud of his penny. He's got nothing. Absolutely nothing. What's a penny? In this day and age, we don't even have 1 cent coins in Australia. They're so useless. You know, you can't buy anything with it. You know, so yet the person's got one cent or 1 penny. He's thinking, "Oh, I'm so, you know, I've got so much here. I'm so wealthy, proud of it." But and that's all our material achievements. Srila Prabhupada would often, not really an analogy, but sort of, you know, an expression. He said that everything in this material world is just a big zero. You know, we've got these big aeroplanes and it's got big tall skyscraper buildings and so many different achievements that they're making. You know, it's just a big zero. It's of no value whatsoever. Why? Because it's not connected to Krishna. Anything that's material, and Krishna says that in the Gita. He points out that, you know, he talks about all the important qualities and he says, but anything other than this is of no value. And that's the nature. Everything in this material world, if it has no connection with Krishna, has no value whatsoever. You know, we may be the most intelligent person in the world. I was just, speaking of the most intelligent person, I just downloaded The internet's amazing, the stuff you can find. And I found all these quotes from Albert Einstein. So, you know, by many considered to be the most intelligent person that ever lived. A very, very smart man. And so I got all these quotes of his, and the one thing I found very interesting is that most of his quotes are connected to God. It seems from just reading, you know, the things he said, it was to some degree a God-conscious person. He understood that anything he knew came from God. He understood that God was the source of everything. And he wasn't thinking that he was, you know, a great person. He wasn't thinking that he was, you know, very, very intelligent or anything like that. He actually understood this has all come by God's mercy. And so we see Brahma has the same position here, or is expressing the same understanding that, you know, by myself, what am I? I'm nothing. I can't create this universe without you. And we see in the next verse, the Lord says to him, now you can create the universe. He blesses him, but now you can create the universe. And we see, you know, it's the same. You look in the Bhagavad Gita. What's one of the final things that Arjuna says to Krishna in the 18th chapter? What's one of the final prayers there? He says, Tat prasada maya chuta. By your mercy, my Lord, now I'm understanding the truth. Kadashe vachanam tava. And I will act according to your instructions. So this is the mood of a devotee. He's not thinking that by my own ability, by my prowess, you know, like you read these sort of stories of the demons, you know, of Ravana and Kamsa and all these, and by my prowess I will vanquish all my enemies. Ishraham hambogi siroham balavam sukhi. That I am, you know, Ishra, I'm the controller. Ishraham. Ahambogi, that I am the enjoyer. Siroham, I am perfect. Balavam sukhi, strong and happy. You know, the demon's thinking like that. They're thinking that everything's come about. Well, material, not even demon, just a materialistic person is thinking that everything has come about. Everything that's happening to me is by my own prowess, by my own endeavor. Not actually understanding even the basic thing like the law of karma, even that these, you know, these things are coming about because we're destined. And we see so many times, you know, people born in exactly the same situations. You know, it might even be identical twins. And one person has this kind of life, one person, the other one has a completely different type of life. Even though born at the same time, same parents, same situation, same everything. Practically speaking, the same body, you know, in terms of look. But they have vastly different lives. It's kind of interesting, in ISKCON, I've met so many identical twins. And more than I've met anywhere else in my life, I've met so many identical twins in ISKCON. And you can see, there's such a difference between them. Even though the situation appears to be exactly the same. So, it can't be by their endeavor, because they're making the same endeavor, they've got the same parents, can't, you know, but based on their birth. You know, because people are after, they're aspiring for a high birth. Kunti says. People, they want birth, they want this, they want to be very beautiful, they want to be very knowledgeable, they want to have great wealth. They're thinking that if I have these things, I'll be happy. But then we see, you know, so often we see people that have all these things, have great beauty, you know, physical beauty. And yet we see, you know, like you know, some of these ladies that they've got this, you know, so-called physical beauty, and they're worried they might get wrinkles, or they're worried they might get fat and things like that. So they go on these like ridiculous diets, you know, or they. I know one young lady. She actually she takes purgatives, you know, what do you call them? Things that make, yeah, laxatives. She takes laxatives so she can, everything she eats, she can pass it out because she doesn't want to get fat. You know, or other people they have plastic surgery. You know, they change the features because they want to remain beautiful forever. But when they have plastic surgery in their face is like it's frozen. They have no expression left in their face. You know, so they're doing all these things to try to maintain the temporary. They want to become eternal. And it's kind of interesting because the living entity has this notion somewhere in the back of their consciousness that they are eternal. But because they have no knowledge, they're thinking it's the body. But anyone who has a little bit of understanding can actually see the body's a temporary thing. You know, once you get past your 30s or 40s, you really start to get the idea that, yeah, it's really temporary and it just, you know, often, you know, they have this common expression in Australia that it doesn't get any better than this. So I like to say, yes, it doesn't actually, it's all downhill. And that's just the reality of this material world. And of course, we're not pessimistic about it because, you know, devotees are actually the most optimistic people because they realize what the material world is, or they should realize what the material world is, and understand that if we follow the process of devotional service, if we satisfy Krishna by our endeavors, by our sincere endeavors, which is what the Lord is saying here to Brahma, because of your sincere endeavors, I'm happy. If we satisfy Krishna by our sincere endeavors, then he'll fulfill all our spiritual desires. And even we see with great Vaishnavas that also the material desires are also satisfied. We see with Dhruva Maharaj, you know, he approached the Lord with material desires. He wanted to have a kingdom greater than that of his great-grandfather, who was Lord Brahma. He wanted to have the greatest kingdom. And yet, so he approached the Lord. He was chanting prayers to, you know, in service to the Lord and performed austerities. And then when he actually saw Vishnu, you know, he kind of became stunned and he couldn't speak. And then Vishnu touched him on the head and he started off with very nice prayers. And one of the prayers he chanted, I think it's recorded in the Harivamsa, which is a book by Sanatana Goswami, which is like a commentary on the Bhagavatam. And in that prayer he's saying, my dear Lord, you know, I was actually praying for broken pieces of glass. But now upon seeing you, I've received the most valuable jewel. He actually had an understanding, you know, because of his realization. He had an understanding of what, you know, he was after the greatest kingdom in existence, greater than that of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is in charge of the whole material universe. You know, he wanted a kingdom greater than that. It's such big, you know, big material desires. He really wanted to have something amazing. And then when he saw Vishnu, when he actually got the darshan of Vishnu, he realized that is so insignificant. It's just like, you know, here in the city you see so many broken pieces of glass on the ground, and who cares for them? You know, does anyone go around collecting all the broken glass? Oh, it's so valuable, I want to have all this broken glass. No one bothers with things like that because it's of no value. And he was seeing that actually this big material desire I had is no better than a piece of broken glass on the street. So I give it up. And actually having the darshan of the Lord is the most valuable jewel. And we see so many examples like that. You look at Sanatana Goswami with a touchstone. He had a touchstone, he kept it in the rubbish heap because it was no value to him. Why? Because he actually had the gift of devotional service. He realized the benefit of the opportunity to serve Krishna. And, you know, in our life, you know, in my life, I actually get realizations that from time to time of actually how nice a situation it is that we have here in Krishna consciousness. We get the opportunity to associate with wonderful Vaishnavas. We get the opportunity to serve the Lord in his deity form. We get the opportunity to study the Bhagavatam. You know, for many people, this is such a fictitious thing, you know, the Bhagavatam. What is this? Yeah, but, you know, when you actually... And Krishna is making this point here, the Lord is making this point here to Brahma, that people who don't have any piety, people who don't have any bhakti, they're not going to be able to chant these prayers. Or, you know, sorry, Prabhupada's making the point here in his purport. They're not going to be able to chant these prayers because they just think it's all fictitious. It's all just a waste of time. They don't realize what it is, the gift of devotional service. They don't realize how wonderful this gift is. But when one, you know, practices devotional service, as one becomes purified through the process of devotional service, then more and more the illusion is removed, the anathas are removed, and we start to see the reality. You know, it's just like the analogy is given, like a mirror. You know, when you get you have a garage, and you might store all these old things in the garage, and the mirror becomes covered up in dust. And actually, I can give a different, but I'll give another analogy later on. But to use the mirror as a mirror, you actually can't see yourself because it's so dirty. But as you clean away the dust, then the nature of you becomes more and more revealed, and you actually see the nature, you know, the self. There was Chinnanivas told me a story years ago about these folks in Bombay. They had an old deity in their house, which they'd been in the family for hundreds of years. And one day they decided they'd do some maha cleaning on the deity. So then they were bathing and scrubbing and polishing the deity, and they kept cleaning and cleaning and cleaning. And they just cleaned away layer upon layer upon layer. Because sometimes you see these deities and these old deities in people's homes, and they're quite, you know, you can only see some of the features. Often they're quite dirty. But this deity was really dirty. They just sort of poured the water but never actually cleaned the deity. Anyhow, they kept cleaning and cleaning and cleaning the deity, and eventually they found that the deity was made of jewels. It was just a solid jewel. And it was worth, you know, I don't know how much, but it was like worth a lot of money. You know, but they never knew that because it was all covered in dirt. So just by the process of cleaning, the true nature of the self becomes revealed. And this is the process of devotional service. As Lord Chaitanya says, it's this Chaito Dharpana Marjanam, this process of devotional service, the process of cleansing the heart. But not the material heart, not this muscle that's pumping away in your body, but cleansing. There was a word in one of the previous verses, it was Chaita. So Chaita can mean different things. It can mean the heart, it can mean the consciousness, it can mean the mind. And it's all, you know, because the heart, you know, in material terms is just a muscle that's pumping blood throughout the body, but, you know, the consciousness, you know, of the self. So the idea is this Chaito Dharpana Marjana, so, you know, this Dharpana Marjana, cleansing the mirror of the heart or the mind or the consciousness. The process of devotional service is cleansing the mirror. So why? So we can actually see the self. We can see the reality of who we are, a servant of Krishna, and nothing more than that. I'm not this body. I'm not a man. I'm not a woman, or not whatever. And once we can come to this understanding of the reality, then we actually start to see things as they are, and we know how to act because we understand who we are, and we understand who everyone else is, and we understand the position of the Lord, and then we know what is our function, what is our role within the world. And you know, how to act properly. So Brahma, he's gone through this process. You know, he's born on the lotus. He didn't really know who he was. He didn't know where he was. He didn't know anything. But through the process of, you know, then he heard, you know, the vibration of tapa, and he performed tapasya, and he actually started to gain realization. He became purified. He gained realization. He started to see. You know, when he actually understood who he was, then he could see everything. You know, it was described how he saw, you know, the Lord and the ocean, and he saw the lotus, and he saw everything through this process of self-realization. And then he actually understood who he was. Then he knew what his duty was. His duty was to worship the Lord, and he was offering prayers, glorifying the Lord. And then it came to the point where Krishna blesses him so he can carry out his activities. Okay, I'm not sure how long class is supposed to go for, but I guess that's a good time to finish. Any questions at all? Comments? Corrections? Complaints?
You mentioned that a lot of our just sincere and God. Can you say more about our sincere and God? Because here it's saying it's about asking for devotion and asking for benediction.
Yeah. The thing is, like, Brahma's asking for a benediction, but what's the benediction he's asking? He's asking for the benediction of being able to serve him according to his instructions. You know, so that's the thing. He's not asking for, you know, give me a new car, give me a nice wife, give me a, you know, a house by the sea or anything, or Jai Jagadish Hari, something like that. He's asking, please give me the intelligence to be able to serve you. Please give me guidance so I can serve you to your satisfaction. Please give me guidance so I can, you know, achieve the task you've asked me to do, because I'm nothing but your servant. That's the perspective from Brahma's taking. I'm nothing but your servant, so please just guide me so I can serve you more effectively. Because, you know, in reality, what do we know about how to serve Krishna? What do we know about the desire of the Lord, and what do we know about what he wants us to do? Not much. I mean, it may know a little bit, but not that much. So, you know, we approach the guru, we ask, you know, we see Prabhupada when he approached Bhaktisiddhanta. He just asked him, you know, how can I serve you? He didn't ask him, you know, how can I make $1 million? How can I become a successful businessman? That's a material thing. The guru is for spiritual things. You know, so many devotees, they go to the guru and they ask him, the guru, for guidance on material problems. But that's not actually what the guru is for. Guru's not a marriage counselor. Guru's not a health advisor. Guru's to give instructions in spiritual life. You know, so, you know, we don't waste their time with those kind of questions. So in the same way, you know, Brahma's not wasting Krishna's time. with, you know, material questions. He's not wasting his time with how can I improve my you know, standard of living or anything like that. How can I make more money or whatever. He's approaching, you know, and it's kind of, there was a story one time. Prabhupada was traveling on a train in India with some sannyas disciples, and these Indian men, they approached Prabhupada, they asked Prabhupada for his benediction. You know, because it's quite common that people will go to a sadhu and ask them for some material benediction. They want something, some material gain. And then Srila Prabhupada, he said, you want my benediction? He pointed to his sannyas disciples, he says, there's my benediction. And they very quickly retreated because they didn't want that. They wanted something material. So when we're approaching Krishna, first we need to know what to approach for, not we just go for some material thing. Because you may get that material thing, but you won't be happy. Yeah? But if we approach the Lord for the proper, you know, with the proper mentality, then we'll actually become satisfied. Because that's you know, every living entity is looking for that. Every living entity is looking for satisfaction in his life, to be peaceful, to be happy. But you're not going to find that in material in the material world. You know, it's like this, because when I was looking up these quotes of Einstein, I was actually looking for a specific quote, and it's probably something you all know. It's like he says that, you know, a problem cannot be solved by the thinking which created the problem. Yeah? So here we are in this material world. We're suffering. I mean, and someone who's intelligent understands that. Most people don't. They think they're having a great time, but then their car breaks down, or the you know, whatever. Their kids become drug addicts or something like that. You know, and they suffer. They suffer grievously, but they don't realize that. But you know, one who has intelligence can understand the situation in the material world. Yeah, this is not a good situation. Yet I want to fix this. And we see in the material world that, you know, materialistic people, they'll try to fix a problem with the same kind of thinking that created the problem in the first place. I.e., you can look at, you know, like automobiles, right? They think, well, if we have a car, a vehicle that goes faster than a horse and cart, we're going to solve all these problems. You know, but it's the enjoying mentality behind it, right? So you look at all the problems that come from having an automobile. You know, I mean, just you live in the city here, you know, it's so obvious, you know, just walk down to Beaconsfield Parade in like now even, you know, so many cars going up and down, people sitting in traffic, well, actually the cars aren't going anywhere, they're sitting stationary because of the traffic jams, you know, people are frustrated, you know, they're thinking, I get this car and I'll be able to go from here to here so much faster, yet they spend an hour and a half sitting in a traffic jam going to work, which is only 5 kilometres down the road, they could have walked there faster, you know, so because they have this enjoying mentality, it's the same thinking. The idea is, okay, this is causing me suffering. I want to enjoy. Therefore, I'll make this device so I can enjoy more. But actually, it just creates more suffering. So you have to change the consciousness behind it. Therefore, rather than taking a materialistic approach, we need to actually take it from the spiritual perspective to understand the nature of the self, that I'm not this body. I'm Krishna's eternal servant. Krishna's my Lord and Master. But because they put their, you know, the center of attention is sense gratification, whatever they do, it's just going to bring more frustration. Even if they have vehicles that will travel, you know, 10,000 miles an hour, they're still going to bring the same type of frustration. You know, it's like they get a disease, okay, they find a cure for that disease, and a worse disease comes along. You know, it's just, it doesn't end. And the more you try to enjoy the material world, the more you're going to suffer. Simple thing. But they don't figure that out. Have to change the way they look at things. And even a person like Albert Einstein, very smart man, he understood that. You can't solve material problems with material thinking. You have to have a spiritual solution. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Samaveta Bhakta Vrindiki, Shri Prabhupada Ki, Jainita Go Premanandi Hari Om.